Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, geeks of all ages, welcome to episode 160. That is episode 160 of the Geek Legacy Podcast. I'm Justin Cavender, and with me, as always, you're so funny, Dave Edmondson and Mr. Randy Van Dyke. How the hell
are you?
We're great. How are you?
Oh, man. I'm so good. You just put a big old smile on my face. It's so awkward. I feel terrible doing that all the time with you.
I love it.
It's just a total speed bump. It does. Yeah. Total speed bump. Funny shit. I even let out the drunk laugh. I don't know. I didn't even know that existed until like a couple months ago.
The drunk laugh?
Yeah, that crazy maniacal laugh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like the hysterical, completely uncontrollable, holy shit, where did that come from laugh?
Yeah.
Didn't even know it could come out of you sober.
I know, right? It's crazy.
well, maybe you weren't sober.
Ooh, maybe.
I'm a little drunk. Just like all the people that were at the Emmys. Dave, go over some of the big winners.
HBO.
Oh, my God. They got it all.
Pretty much. Emmys give out 26 awards. HBO won 14 of them. Game of Thrones just killed everybody. They won so many awards that they're going to rename Emmys next year to Thronies, I think. And they're just going to be like Peter Dinklage sitting on the toilet.
Oh, wow.
It got dirty quick.
So wait now, was this Game of Thrones... Were these awards for the season that we just had or for last year's?
And it's for the season we just had, which is ironic because both Game of Thrones and Veep, which was one for best comedy actress, best comedy supporting actor, I would say this was both of their weakest seasons, and they've never won in the past. This was their first win for their series.
Oh.
Veep really kind of shocked the world. Modern Family won the last five awards, so they were going into it facing history. They were tied with Frasier for the most consecutive wins by a comedy, and number six would have put them atop the mountain all by themselves. And a little show called Veep came in and kicked its ass, which is it's kind of false advertisement because Julia Louis-Dreyfus plays the president in Veep now. She got bumped up to president, so Veep's kind of a lie. Do you guys watch Veep at all?
No, it's on my list though. Sorry, Dave. I know you've been telling me it's funny since day one, and I just haven't got around to it.
I haven't got into it either.
It really is like Elaine. If Elaine from Seinfeld had gotten like an Ivy League education and became the vice president, it is that. Like she's just as neurotic and insecure, but she's the vice president, and she just surrounds herself with like these idiot yes people, and it's. It is an amazing show, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus has won it a couple times, and so she's one of the more decorated comic actresses, and she won for Seinfeld twice as well. But Game of Thrones, yeah, Peter Dinklage won for Best Supporting Actor, Game of Thrones won for Best Show, D.B. Weiss and David Benioff, they won for Best Writing, Best Directing, clickety-clickety. Who dares clickety-clickety?
I have no idea.
It must be me. Sorry, guys.
That's all right. We're top
pros. How dare I Google?
We are going to get in trouble on the internet. But, so the Emmys, Andy Samberg was the host. He did an okay job. The Emmys never really are too risque. So the big winner, like I said, was HBO. They won 14 of the 26 awards. The big three, ABC, NBC, CBS, they only won three awards all night. One of them was by Viola Davis, who became the first African American woman to win a Best Supporting Actress or Best Actress in a drama for Getting Away with Murder, and she gave a pretty powerful speech about opportunities and the inherent racism and all that stuff. So she's been lauded as an amazing spokesperson for minorities and well deserved.
Wait, did Crazy Eyes win?
She did. She won last year too. So
she's pretty amazing.
She is. She's the only reason I watch the show.
She looks so normal when she doesn't have like that crazy hair, and when she's not like doing that kind of hunched over with her crazy mannerisms and everything. She's so normal looking. It's an amazing transformation. That's hell of an actor.
Two, Two people in love with connecting. Two other people. Connecting with two other people and aliens.
is it Yuzo? Is that how you say her name?
Is it Uzo or
Yuzo?
I don't know.
Like an Uzi?
Pick Uzo. One, and that's, I'm sure, the wrong one. So if you pick Uzo, I'll pick Yuzo.
I would say Uzo, since it's like a Uzi, but Uzo.
I would say that's a safe bet.
Either way, she's crazy eyes, and she's fantastic.
Yeah. And Jon Hamm finally won for Mad Men. He'd been nominated 8 times for Best Actor, and he had never won. And so he finally won his Best Actor.
Now, do you think that there's pressure to give awards to people like Jon Hamm because it was the final season? Or is that hogwash?
I would think so, but Christina Hendricks, Elizabeth Moss, who had been nominated 7 times, she went home empty-handed, so she was 0 for 7. But I do believe that she's a she. That's true.
And Hollywood doesn't necessarily care for the females.
I do believe that they wanted to honor Mad Men in some way, and this was the way they did it. I mean, he went up against some heavy hitters, you know, Kyle Chandler from Bloodline, Jeff Daniels from Newsroom, Bob Odenkirk for Better Call Saul, Liev Schreiber for Ray Donovan, and Kevin Spacey for House of Cards. House of Cards won nothing, which was kind of a surprise.
Well, that season sucked major ass too.
Well, so did the Game of Thrones season, though.
That's true. I don't know. Why do you think that is? Do you think that we just expect more from shows, or do you think that it was genuinely just poor writing and bad storytelling this time around?
For which show?
Either. I feel like everything has been underwhelming this year for other shows.
Well, I think House of Cards, I think they painted themselves in a corner by making him president by season 2.
Yeah,
I think they shot up too fast, but they couldn't have him have this dramatic fall from grace because, you know, he's the president, so they had to... You know, they had to invent all of this turmoil with his relationship and all these things that would take him down emotionally, but not really belittle his political power, because in the end he still has to be, you know, Frank Underwood. Yeah. So I think that's what happened with House of Cards. Game of Thrones, I think that Weiss and Benioff are trying to pare down this enormous cast, and it's really hard because, you know, most shows only have like 2 or 3 major characters, so they can focus a lot of the episode around these characters. Game of Thrones has, you know, arguably you could say that they have 20 characters that could be the focus of an entire episode. And by only allowing them minutes of screen time an episode, it's really hard to progress any one story. And so they're really, instead of doing 2 or 3 major stories, they're progressing like 20 little stories. And it's just too much setup and not enough payoff in my mind. Mm. But what do you think, Randy? I talked a lot there.
I mean, overall, I agree when it comes to House of Cards. I still enjoy it, even though this season wasn't the best. I don't know. It seems that since Breaking Bad wasn't there to accept all the awards, it kind of shook up a lot of the regular categories that we'd seen a lot of the same winners hitting for the last few years. So they just kind of spread the love around.
Right. There, we can finally give other shows an award now.
Yeah.
Now that the goddamn meth dealer's out of town.
Oh, man. Speaking of which, Corey's watching that. And I can't believe how horrible Skylar is. Like, I think my mind just kind of blocked her out, and I totally forgot about how much I hate Skylar. And then the second she started talking, I'm like, oh my god, I hate this character so much. And it was making my blood boil.
Yeah, I don't hate her as much as you, but she definitely irritates me. I'm about 3 episodes away from finishing the series, and I gotta say, Skinny Pete and Badger, they're my guys, man.
Yeah, they're pretty amazing.
They did one of the last episodes, they had this whole thing about Star Trek. And it's just the two of them just riffing on Star Trek for like 5 minutes.
Oh, I know.
Talking about like the pie eating contest and how Scotty is like helping Chekhov win by beaming the pies out of his stomach. But then like Uhura comes in and shows her like space titties and distracts Scotty. And so Scotty actually like beams Chekhov's like stomach into space. And they're just going on and on.
Didn't somebody make like a Flash animated video of that?
Did they?
I think yeah.
I've seen that, yes. That is a thing you must
look. I'm going to watch that as soon as this is over because they're just so funny, bitch. She's like, that ain't original. That's Voyager, yo. Totally just geeking. These two meth heads just geeking out. It's amazing.
That's good stuff.
Well, what do you think, Justin? What do you think is the big problem with the big two, we'll call them, Game of Thrones and House of Cards?
That's actually a good question. I don't know the answer to that. I think you are pretty close with the amount of characters that Game of Thrones has. We've seen them cut out characters and storylines in general. Now they're pretty much on their own. They know how the story's supposed to go and play out. So definitely will be interesting to see how they shape the remainder of the story. I'm a little worried because for the most part it was R.R. Martin's writing that kind of steered the ship, and now they will be on their own. And we'll see if it's these showrunners that make the show amazing or if it's just the source material that make it amazing.
Now, do you think that possibly it's that now that they're in charge of crafting their own narrative, do you think that this was almost like their episode one, their sacrificial lamb, that they needed to reintroduce and to bump up status-wise some of the minor characters because they plan on exploring them more further in the future that we don't know about? And that just they needed this season for a lot of setup for stuff that's going to happen that we haven't been introduced to?
I think so. They definitely have a chance to, at least with some of the big sequences, like the action sequences that happen in 5 that can ultimately just be written off the show entirely. I think that is a little bit risky, and we'll see how that plays out, especially leaving out a crucial character who has never been mentioned, who goes on to just take over Westeros by force, and he's not even been mentioned at all. I think that's kind of crazy. So I think it's going to be a completely different ending, and I think regardless, ultimately it might be the same result, but how we get there is going to be completely different. And so for better or worse, I think we just have to ride this one out.
Did you see that Kit Harington, who plays Jon Snow, did a Reddit AMA, and someone asked him how long he was going to be on Game of Thrones, and he said that he was going to be in it until he was out of his 20s, mm-hmm. and he's 28 now, so he would be in it for the last up to 8 seasons.
Yeah, until it's over.
Yeah, so.
And see, that's another thing, too, is we haven't explored this reincarnation too much. I remember that one Lightning Lord dude that was with the Brotherhood Without Banners.
Yeah. Like Belador or something.
Yeah, whatever the hell his name is.
Baelor.
He was the last time that we ever touched on that, and I think that was in season 3 of the show. And it's going to be interesting to see if he actually dies and comes back, or if he was just on the brink of death and Melisandre, or whatever her name is, just kind of nurses him back to health.
Yeah, because we never got Zombie Catelyn.
Right.
It's a thing, guys.
They have a real interesting opportunity to answer some questions that we have in the books. Things like what happened to the Hound? What happens to Jon Snow? What happens to Varys? These are all things that we really don't know. And same with Littlefinger. You know, he's making his own history, and it's some exciting stuff, and I can't wait to see how that plays out.
Yeah, because Varys is interesting because in the books and the show, he's in 2 different continents.
Yeah, so that's a whole new ballgame right there. He was out of danger in the books. Now he's in the thick of things.
Right, and he plays an important part in who he interacts with and has interactions with in King's Landing, and he ain't there.
Yeah, so that's that might be part of the whole retooling of the entire story, so we'll see. Crazy shit, man. Crazy shit. As far as House of Cards goes, though, even if they wanted to just peel back this emotional layer of Francis Underwood, I don't think they went about it the right way. I wasn't even remotely interested in a single plot line that was going on in House of Cards. If they really wanted to drive this wedge between the first couple, I think it could have been done differently.
Yeah, I mean, I liked the first half of the season because it seemed like, because the Underwoods are a great team. And
right.
Like, what makes them great is, like, they complement each other and they have, like, this common goal. And they're just so good together. And it seemed like the first half of the season they were kind of having a schism to where they were going to, like, bring them apart and the shit was going to hit the fan. And then by, like, the halfway point, they were going to like unify and then it'd be like, oh, there's no stopping the Underwoods. But like they never had that reconnect. And so like it seems like this like 5-episode story arc, they expanded to 10 episodes and it kind of, you kind of felt the bloat. And there's just so many story threads just never went anywhere.
You know, right. You have, like America Works. He was never elected. He was just, you know, put into office. And the whole thing with what's his name? Meacham or whatever the hell his name. Meacham. Is that his name?
Whatever the hell. Yeah, that's a Secret Service guy.
Yeah. Or whatever the name was.
Doug?
Doug, yeah. Stamper.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, and his whole plot line to where he ended up not even really playing. Like, it all went with the woman. He had to find the woman. He's going to let her go. He's going to kill her. I don't know, that whole thing was just stupid. And it pissed me off.
And then he killed her.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
I'm like, wow. All of that. The back and forth, the inner struggle. He's just a weirdo. That's all there is.
Should have just killed her to begin with. It would have been a lot less headache.
Yeah. And the whole thing with the biographer. And
yeah, it was all stupid.
They had that one weird moment. The
weird gay moments.
Yeah, he's had a couple of those. Remember that?
Yeah, with his buddy. Bodyguard.
Yeah, with Meechan.
Yeah, with his bodyguard and even with his friend back in college. Remember when he went back and they were like in the library and stuff? They broke in the library and then they were kind of making sweet love with their eyes to each other.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
What?
Huh? It's just all over the place. That's why I didn't win any awards, Dave. It's all over the place.
I mean, as much as this season was not as good as the first, I thought it was still interesting enough to keep watching. There wasn't anything that put me off of it enough to be like, all right, well, I'm moving on and not going to continue. It kept me coming back, and it's going to keep me coming back for another season.
Yeah, and I think it too, that I think House of Cards, I don't think it was necessarily a bad season. I think that we were just used to
Certain pace or a certain quality.
We're used to Kate Mara getting thrown in front of a train in episode one.
Right, and what it comes down to is I genuinely like the characters, regardless of how they're changing in each going series or season, rather. I still genuinely like the characters, and I want to know what happens to them.
Yeah, and I think House of Cards is probably the most cinematically shot show on television. It's
absolutely
the most, it's by far the closest to movie on TV that you're going to get. Like it looks amazing.
It looks amazing, but I just thought this season was just boring. Like I don't really remember anything happening. It was a whole lot of, oh my god, this episode just needs to end already.
I thought you stopped watching the show after the first 5 minutes of the first episode of the first season when
I did.
Dog.
I did, but then I had to because there was this huge love for it and you guys couldn't stop jerking off to it, I had to watch it.
And then you started jerking off to it.
Yes.
Yeah. And everybody was happily jerking off until this season.
Then it just stopped.
Then we're left holding our dicks in our hand going, wait, what just happened?
Is it okay to come? Is it okay?
It is not okay. You know what else is not okay?
Edging.
Watching Uncle Ben die again.
Which we're not going to have to do.
Yeah, how about that?
But our Spider-Man is going to be so young. How are we not going to get to see that part of his origin?
Yeah, if he's 15, Dave. So they let it slip that he's going to be 15. I don't know if it's slipping, but it happened.
It's like slipping in the shower.
He's a young Pete. A young Pistol Pete. And he is 15, so maybe we just get to see the aftermath.
Yeah.
It's just going to jump right into him being Spider-Man.
Yeah, I think what John Watts is trying to do, the director, is he's like, his quote was like, how many times do we have to see Ben get killed? We get it. We know why he's Spider-Man. And that they've had some really interesting quotes. You know, Francis Daly and Jonathan Goldstein, who are gonna write it, who also directed Vacation this year, they compared it to like a John Hughes movie, which is a pretty amazing comparison. I think a Peter Parker John Hughes movie would be pretty great. And they really want to emphasize that, you know, this is just a kid. I mean, they kind of hint at it very briefly in the first Amazing Spider-Man, like, hey, it's just a kid. I'm sorry, that was in Spider-Man 2 with Tobey Maguire. But they really want it to be like, if you were going through puberty and you were a kid and now you have these superpowers, like, this is gonna change your life. And it's gonna be good and bad. And we're gonna see new villains. No more Electro, no more Rhino. Poor Jamie Foxx. So yeah, he's gonna be 15 and young. What do you think, Justin?
I'm in. Because that's how I've always pictured him, as just a young kid. And that's why he doesn't really fit in so well with the other heroes. You know, they're all rich billionaires. He's poor. He has no money. And he plays with his food. And I thought that's where Amazing Spider-Man did a good job, where he, every time he was fighting crime, he was having fun doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He wasn't taking his job too serious. He was actually enjoying what he was doing.
You're like, do I look like a cop?
Yeah. That, I think that sets him apart. And I thought Andrew Garfield nailed that. Too bad he's like 40 years old.
Yeah. He was great, though.
He was. He was amazing.
What about you, Randy? Do you need the origin story? Do you need Uncle Ben dying again?
No. I mean, I agree with the tone of pretty much what everybody's been saying. We have seen it enough. We can move on. I feel it's the same way we all feel about seeing Bruce Wayne's parents die again. We don't need to see it. Everybody, everybody who has an interest in Batman in any way knows his origin story. Same thing, Spider-Man. If you know anything about it, there's been two entire iterations with multiple movies in each franchise. We know how it happens.
They should do it in like the Zapruder film, and it's just back and to the left.
Yeah.
Over again.
You know how you need to show it to us? Show it to us, you know, how at the beginning of Marvel movies, how it's kind of got like that flipping of a comic book page kind of thing with the Marvel title. No.
This is Uncle Ben's head getting blown up?
It's like a flip book of Uncle Ben dying. It's not quite like a flip book, but show it to us like in the opening credit sequence, all as like a comic book, like panel by panel, just drawings. Boom, entire origin story told in the opening 2 minutes of the credit sequence as we're kind of zooming around with some epic music and Spider-Man shenanigans and webs and shit. And that is how we are introduced to his world. We don't need to see a live-action representation of it. It just jumps us right into it.
Boom.
Yeah. I mean, that way we still, anybody who, you know, if they're a kid watching the movie for the first time, which by all the reason why they keep doing origin stories every time they do a reboot of any superhero franchise is for the brand new people, the kids, the younger audience who hasn't seen the original content yet. So this will still get everybody up to speed, but it doesn't force feed it down our throats.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that moviegoers are idiots.
Right. But I mean, it's the thing is, though, kids get excited when they see Spider-Man, not when they see Peter Parker.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look at Spider-Man!
We don't need to see him get bit by the spider. I think if you don't show it, you'll sell more comics. People are like, hey, what's up with the Spider-Man guy? How'd he get like this? I should read some comics.
And then eventually, you know, 60 issues down the line, you do an origin tale.
Yeah, exactly.
Where he has like a flashback or something like that.
There's all that shit about you eat 8 spiders a year. They crawl into your open mouth while you're sleeping. Yeah.
Yeah. Why aren't I Spider-Man?
Because you don't have the cool blue and red one crawling in your mouth.
Oh, that's true.
You know who I want to be Spider-Man? Sebastian Stan. I heard he said some crazy stuff, Justin. Tell me about it.
So, Zack Snyder, this fucking guy, he said something to the effect of Ant-Man being the flavor of the week, and we talked about it on the podcast either last week or the week before. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. Either way, he said it. It's irritating and it's stupid and that's just unfortunate. So Sebastian Stan fired back, not in like a mean way, just sort of in a ha ha ha. You're so snooty. And he was saying, yeah, I'm sitting here and I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, do I want to fire some shots at DC right now at Zack Snyder? I read some of those comments and he said something about Batman and Superman. I can't remember where I read that somewhere. And this is Sebastian Stan talking to Collider, by the way. Something about, it's not going to be your flavor of the week, Ant-Man. And I was like, oh, thanks, Zach. That's great. Way to do something original. But I would say we're still making something very original in our own way. I mean, the Russos are coming in, they're taking something people are used to, and they're shaping it up and changing it in a very different way. They're not trying to mimic a better Christopher Nolan movie or something like that. Burn. Topical cream. You need some, Mr. Snyder.
Drop the mic.
So, I don't know. It's just one of those things where stirring the pot. And there's always going to be those Marvel fans and those DC fans. And it's almost like playground bullshit, you know what I mean? But at the same time, I don't know. I think I'm going to have to side with Mr. Stan on this one. Winter Soldier is one of my favorite comic book movies. And, turned a character that I could care less about, which is Captain America, and made it one of my favorite comic book movies. That's pretty impressive, Dave.
Yeah, you know I'm not taking Zack Snyder's side on this. or anything ever. I think it was great. I think that Zack Snyder put his foot in his mouth, and I'm sure that if he could, he would take it back, because he has to know that what he said was stupid and it shouldn't have been said. And I think this is kind of until the real end jibe, I think it was kind of a fun and playful back and forth. I think once he said, like, trying to, like, recreate a Nolan film, that at that point it became like a mean attack, but it's all right. It's so charming when it comes from Mr. Stan.
Right. And that's the thing. We talked about this the other day, where flavor of the week, Ant-Man, where I couldn't disagree more. It was, here was a property that no one had any interest in, and they made it fun and delightful. That's hard to do, man. It's hard to sell anybody on something called Ant-Man.
Yes.
And it made its money back.
I mean, Marvel's been doing it since day one. I mean, when the first Iron Man movie came out, no one gave two shits about Iron Man. Everyone loves him now, but anyone who tells you back then, oh, I was the biggest Iron Man fan, I couldn't wait for Iron Man to come out, Iron Man is my favorite comic pair, they're so full of shit. In 2006, nobody gave two shits about Iron Man. I remember having to, like, sell people, like, no, you have to see Iron Man. Right. It's good.
We would spend hours talking about how much of an asshole Tony Stark was.
Yeah.
Because
it was shortly after, like, Civil War. And I'm like, what an asshole. I'm like, I'm going to watch this movie. I remember trying to convince James at work, you got to see Iron Man. He's like, it's just as good as Transformers. And I'm like, it's better. And he's like, fuck you, there's nothing better than Transformers. I'm like, maybe you shouldn't watch movies. Yeah, and then they did it again. I mean, you know, look at Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, the big gripe was, sure, Marvel can make these established characters like Thor and Captain America and Hulk. They could make them cool. But then, so Marvel took that criticism, took a group of characters that nobody cared about, nobody knew about in the Guardians of the Galaxy. And I know when I say this, there are comic book fans who have loved Guardians of the Galaxy forever. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking about the other, like, $700 million worth of box office that it made. And Marvel's like, see, we can do it. And I think that's great.
Me too.
What do you think, Randy? You love Zack Snyder.
He loves Zack Snyder, and he hates Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's true.
I'm the wrong person to ask.
And you're the perfect person.
I wasn't a big fan of Winter Soldier either.
Oh, that's right.
He fell asleep.
But to be fair, I haven't seen Winter Soldier again since then, which I know I need to, nor have I seen Guardians of the Galaxy again, which, again, I need to. But I just think it's silly. I mean, okay, look, a lot of people are going to go see Marvel movies. A lot of people are going to go see Batman versus Superman. You're all in it together as superhero movies. You don't need to be firing shots across the bow of the ship next to you. They're not your direct enemy. You're there for the same cause. Mm. You're there to get people to go to sure, you can have a friendly rivalry to one up each other, but you're not trying to tank each other. You want that genre to survive. You don't want people to get sick of superhero movies. So I just think it's silly for people to just open fire at one another. So that whole thing, it just strikes me as ridiculous.
Well, plus it forms a schism where I bet if we went and asked 10 random people, like we went to Walmart, maybe not Walmart, we went to Target and we asked 10 people, who was in Marvel, who was in DC, I bet that less than half of them would be able to tell you that Batman is not in the same universe with Captain America.
Right.
I think
except for the fact that they haven't shared a movie screen together, which I think more people are becoming savvy of the Marvel characters just based on the assembly of the superheroes in Avenger movies.
Right, but I mean, the X-Men haven't been in. I think if we took like a broad spectrum of people, if we took, you know, some X-Men, some, you know, Marvel, some DC, I think that most people would fail this test.
It's like Family Feud. We asked 100 people.
Exactly. If we did an
number one answer,
I bet that half of the people would not be able to tell you who's from what universe. And I think that's going to be both a good thing and a bad thing, because we're going to come to the point starting next year where there's going to be a lot of superhero movies coming out a year. There's going to be 5 next year. And I mean, we have to be coming to the saturation point, and it's not a good time for DC, because DC is just getting their cinematic universe started, to where Marvel's been around for, you know, 8-9 years now. They're kind of at like they're the established brand. And so DC needs to, in a way, glom onto that and play on people's ignorance, so that people maybe don't know they're a different company. And this, by having these kind of dumb statements being said, it just kind of shows that they're different.
Yeah.
At a time when DC needs to be the same.
Yeah, it drives kind of a further wedge in between them. So, I totally get what you're saying. I would agree with that.
America.
Good answer.
Captain.
My answer.
Survey says.
Woody Harrelson.
Ah, this guy. He was on Cheers, you know.
He was. He was Woody.
He played himself.
And I will say, Cheers totally holds up.
Yeah, I've been watching it on the Netflix.
It's so good.
The one girl there, though.
Which one?
Perlman, yeah. She's a loose woman.
Yes, she is. She's always hitting on. Anytime, like, Sam brings my old baseball buddy or something, she's ready to drop them panties in the bar.
Yeah, she likes to party.
She's got, like, 9 kids.
Yeah.
She's married, like, 3 times in the show. And
she's the one you want to hang out with.
Yeah.
She's just one of the guys, only.
Why are you listening to the stereo and watching TV at the same time?
I like to party.
Sometimes I like to party.
Yeah, I like her. So it turns out he's going to be a bad guy in the new Planet of the Apes movie.
Yeah, War of the Planet of the Apes.
War of the Planet of the Apes.
It's probably a happy movie then.
Yeah, he's basically going to be playing that asshole in charge of the humans that wants to go to war and sees that war is the only answer and there is no talking and only killing and that's all there is to it.
He didn't see the last movie, did he?
No, it doesn't end well for those humans that feel that way. They get pummeled in the fucking face and then shot.
Yeah, they should like talk their differences out.
Man, that Kobo was a mean little monkey.
He was. Shooting him, like playing like, oh, I'm a happy monkey.
Yeah, he was a bit of a piece of shit though. I mean, as much as I loved watching him destroy the humans, I did not like his retaliation to Caesar. I thought that was fucked up.
No, he's a mean guy.
Angry little
monkey.
Yeah, he needs to be spanked.
He needs to get like monkey herpes.
Somebody is needs that a to thing? Spank that monkey.
Probably, I don't know, dude.
No
bananas. Monkeys are like people.
Oh man, I've been playing Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze. That game is delightful.
It is hard too.
It is a little hard. I love it.
Did you play the first Donkey Kong Country Returns?
No. The last time I touched a Donkey Kong game was on Super Nintendo. Yes, with just the regular Donkey Kong Country.
Nice. Yeah, the Donkey Kong Country Returns games—they're pretty. They're pretty fun. But
that
they
was
get
on
hard.
The Wii, right? And then on the yes, and then now on the Wii with Tropical Freeze, but.
Yeah.
It was my gift from Club Nintendo.
And oh, nice.
I love it. I can't stop playing it.
They escalate quickly.
Yes, they do. But. Exciting stuff. Anyway, Donkey Kong is not in War of the Planet of the Apes, but.
Oh, he should.
He could tear it up. By the way, I was also playing Donkey Kong, and I am just terrible at that game.
Classic game?
Yeah, it's hard.
Everyone's bad at it, except for, like, Billy Mitchell and...
That other guy. Yeah, no, it's a really hard game. But Woody is going to be a bad guy. We know he can play a crazy guy. He's got an incredible range. He can either be super funny or super serious, and I'm pretty sure he'll nail it. The guy's top-notch at everything he does. I am excited.
Uptown all the way.
Uptown all the way. Just like Dino DNA.
Dino DNA.
Spread no expense.
He didn't.
He did not.
Universal's not going to spare any expense either, since freaking Jurassic World's the third highest grossing film of all time. You know, approaching $1.6 billion in the box office.
They're going to keep making those movies until the day we die.
Yeah, looks like it's a planned trilogy right now. They're gonna make 3 of them. Colin Trevorrow, who directed the first one, though, he's busy with a little movie called Star Wars Episode 9. So he's not going to be back for Jurassic World 2 or 3. He's going to executive produce and write it. And he put out an interesting little... He was on the Jurassic Cast podcast. And he... fun guys. They retweeted all our tweets about this and said, hey, what's up? But he said that there were certain lines in the original Jurassic Park that really piqued his interest that he wanted to explore in the films. And he just recently said what was that line from 1 and the line that inspired Jurassic World 2. And so the line from that inspired the first Jurassic World was Ian Malcolm's line, where he's talking about, you know, you stood on the shoulders of geniuses to accomplish something as fast as you could. Before you knew it, you patented, packaged it, slapped on a plastic lunchbox. Now you want to sell it. So that was his, that was the line that inspired Jurassic World 1. The line that's going to inspire Jurassic World 2 is, dinosaurs and man, separated by 65 million years of evolution, have been thrown back into the mix together. How can we know what to expect? And that was what Grant said when Hammond, blank for a second, sorry, Hammond asked him, you know, what he thought was going to happen. So, throw it out to you guys. What do you guys think that means?
Dinosaur eats man, woman inherits the earth.
I think it's great to draw inspiration from lines from the original movie. And the original movie was so faithful to the book too. I don't know. I think it's good. I think what it's doing is it's staying true to the Jurassic Park feel and theme of things. And even in that article that you posted on Geek Legacy today, it was talking about, you know, we've all seen the dinosaur trapped on a, with people trapped on an island story before. It's interesting to see where else it will go. So I'm all about just kind of following this franchise to its next logical conclusion. I want to see what they think of next, what happens next with it.
Yeah, because we know the BD Wong's taking the embryos off the island, so who knows what's going to happen. What I find interesting about not just Jurassic World, but like blockbuster movies in general, like take your Avengers 2, Jurassic World, Furious 7. I mean, we've been talking for about an hour and a half right now. We've probably made like 10 Jurassic Park quotes. We quote that movie a lot. Spare no expense. It's kind of a ride. Dino DNA.
Don't get cheap money, Dutch.
Yeah, don't get cheap. We quote all the time. I have to think about a quote from those movies I mentioned, and I don't see them entering into like the lexicon of like our vocabulary, like movies of old have, to sound like an old man. I mean, am I just expecting too much from movies nowadays, or are they just becoming more and more forgettable because they're so prepackaged to hit all four quadrants?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that we have so much more to choose from now. I mean, look at the sheer number of movies that are hitting theaters and store shelves and VOD we're overstimulated. There's so much stuff coming out. We have so many options that there doesn't seem to be very few of those movies that everybody sees, everybody quotes. You know, there was a common thread back in the 90s when you saw a movie like Jurassic Park. Everybody had just seen it. It was fresh in our minds. You know, that was maybe the only thing that was going on that entire summer, so we would see it over and over and over again. I know you did, David. So, right. I mean, that's what's missing. We're overstimulated. We have too many choices to where it doesn't create that I've got every line memorized. I've seen it 12 times in the theater. It just, who does that anymore?
Right. But I mean, to play devil's advocate, this movie made $1.6 billion, so everybody has seen it.
I might have an answer.
Oh, okay.
So I think it has a lot to do with age. I think that, like in my case, when I was 13, when I saw Jurassic Park, I was, you know, an impressionable young boy. You know what I mean? Like, everything that I saw, I was just eating that shit up on when it came to Jurassic Park. I was mesmerized. I literally thought, like, oh my god, this is the greatest movie ever made. How did they make these dinosaurs look so real? And I just looked at the movie differently. When I was watching Jurassic World, I was just sitting there eating my popcorn and was barely into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I was just looking at the movie with old eyes instead of young eyes. And as I'm looking around the theater and I see kids smiling and the oohs and the ahs and then the running and screaming part, it didn't have that kind of effect on me because I wasn't mesmerized anymore.
That's a great observation. I hadn't thought about that the people that are 13 like we were when we saw the original who are seeing this one, maybe they'll have the same conversation in 20 years. Remember how we used to quote Jurassic World all the time about making dinosaurs? It's probably not a good idea.
Yeah, they're
quoting this other shit.
Right, they're quoting Chris Pratt, whereas we're quoting, you know, fucking Ian and what's his name?
Sam Neill.
Owen.
Sam Neill, yeah, and
sorry, Owen's from Jurassic World.
Right.
Sorry, you're quoting Sam Neill and Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum and
Wayne Knight and Richard Attenborough.
Exactly, Attenborough. That's what I couldn't think of his name.
Laura Dern.
Exactly. So that's just it. The just keep going. Samuel Jackson, hold on to your butts. I mean, you still say that to this day, for crying out loud.
That's right.
I say that every time I make a U-turn.
Yeah. I do too. And now my kids say it back. They're like, Dad, I didn't hold on to my butt. It's still here. I think you shut your mouth.
That's nuts.
Yeah, I guess it could be an age thing. Maybe I gotta hang out with more 13-year-olds, I guess.
Yeah, that's what Randy does.
Hey.
Hey, Randy. Well, I'm not gonna incriminate anybody here.
Please don't.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe we're just kind of taking it for granted. Like, I think you both have really good points as far as, you know, like, maybe now we do take it a little more for granted. Kind of like the internet, you know, porn at our fingertips, you know, and 1996, that was like, holy shit, I can download, in just 10 minutes, I can download this 20-second porno clip.
Right. Or look at my dad's magazines that are 15 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Thanks, Dad.
Ooh, you guys,
yeah. You guys brought your A-game. I appreciate that.
No problem.
All people are going to your A-game. They're going to be like, that David, he's a fucking moron.
Yeah. They're going to say he's worthless.
Yeah. Still does his job.
Oh, jeez. Speaking of worthless, Annie Potts and Ernie Hudson. I kid. They are priceless. Can't put a price on them.
Okay, so this effectively rounds out, with the exception of Sigourney Weaver, this like rounds out the Ghostbusters cast from the previous two movies that are still alive, right?
Like
everybody
it.
But Egon.
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 So let's talk real for a second here.
Ooh, shit, like real world.
Like, seriously, I'm going to drop a load on you guys.
Okay, hang on. Let me put my serious hat on. Okay, right.
Let me open my mouth. My mouth is open.
Right. Harsh.
Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Bombay doors open, dropping the loads. All right. I think...
Oh, my mouth's open.
I think they might actually be coming back as the original cast members. I think... They rather than just have random cameos in the movie, I think there are too many of the original cast members and it is too coincidental that they might actually be planning it as a surprise for all of us. But there may be some reference to the original Ghostbusters universe crafted and forged in the 80s and in our hearts, and they might be going back and just touching on a little bit. I think there are too many coincidences there. I could be completely wrong. This is just speculation. One man's speculation.
One man.
But
I
think it's entirely possible. What do you guys say?
I hope you are 100% correct.
I think that if that was true, they'd try to keep it a secret, because Paul Feig, who's the director, he's the one who's been tweeting out that these people have been in the film. It's not that people have like stumbled across them. Mm. So I think that he would try to keep that a secret.
I don't know, because I'm of both sides when I think about it. I'm like, well, they might want to keep it a secret just so that it's a surprise when it does come out and it gets more people into the theater. But at the same time, if you let stuff like this out, it brings people to speculate, which would also get more people in the theater at least that opening weekend or opening day until they find out what those characters are.
I'd be excited if they played their characters, but they weren't Ghostbusters. Like, they had been Ghostbusters, but now we talked about, like, Mayor Venkman. Like, the idea that Peter Venkman became the mayor of New York City is very funny to me.
Yeah.
And I love that idea. And I could see, who knows what Ernie Hudson would do. He'd probably be, like, a substitute school teacher or something like that, because he was in that movie, The Substitute.
You know who I left out? Rick Moranis. Of course, he's retired now, and it would be very doubtful that he would come out of retirement. But I would love to see that he and Annie Potts' character, Janine Melnitz, ended up together after Ghostbusters 2. They kind of hooked up. So I'd love to see the two of them together with a family, and maybe it's one of their girls who is a current Ghostbuster or something like that. I like that
a lot, Randy.
Yeah. So, I don't know, man.
Had a baby. And became Kristen Wiig.
Dude, that would be amazing. I would pay money to watch that movie. But
she pays her own taxes, which she shouldn't do.
Yeah. Even though you pay her own taxes, you know, you shouldn't do.
God damn, I love that character so much.
When I was a kid, the two lines that would always make me laugh, no matter what, was, okay,
who brought the dog?
And from Beetlejuice, when he kicks it down, he's like, nice fucking bottle. Hong Hong. So much the fact that, like, even though my kids should not be watching a movie with the F word, I called my 8-year-old son into the room when that part came up on Beetlejuice the other day. I'm like, your mom's gonna be mad I'm showing you this, but this was like the funniest thing when I was a kid. And I'm like, watch this. And I'm just like watching him watch it and just to see the delight in his eyes. Half because, you know, I let him watch a movie with the F word in it, but it was priceless. It transcends time. Sorry. That was a little tangent.
Many shoes in Zool knew what it was like to be roasted in the depths of his floor that day, I can tell you.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
See, now tell me one quote from Avengers 2.
Can't. Watch your mouth. Or language, that's what it was.
Language?
That's all I remember.
Captain America.
Yeah. And then when he's like, sorry, when Iron Man punches Hulk and makes him mad. He's like, I'm sorry.
Dick move, Banner. Dick move.
Or when
Silver.
Yeah, when he says, no one would ever know, or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, so I'm fighting fucking Ultron. It's pretty funny. He killed it. He was the highlight of that movie.
Yeah.
Who knew that Joss Robin Whedon. Hood would be the coolest character in that whole movie? I don't remember his name. What's his name?
Jeremy Renner?
Yeah, what's his name in the show? Hawkeye.
Hawkeye.
Yeah. Birdman.
Well, Robin. Robin Hood.
Yeah, no, he was definitely my favorite character in that movie. Which is weird. Bizarre world.
The one with no power.
Right.
He shoots real well.
He does. That's
he took ass to the biathlon.
That's is that where you ski and then shoot?
Yeah. I don't know where that came from. Who thought, let's make this an Olympic sport?
You should have to go off the ski jump and then shoot something with your bow and arrow.
In midair?
Yeah. That would be cool.
That would be so dangerous. People would just be getting winged all the time.
People in the crowds just getting shot.
They have like this bulletproof glass up.
Attendance at those events is like zero.
Yeah.
You gotta watch it via satellite.
All the cameras are automated because they keep shooting cameramen.
Yeah, just people who want to commit suicide and like thrill junkies.
Yeah, or someone shoots arrows up at them when they're on the ski jump and they gotta catch it.
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
Like Mr. Miyagi style and the next Karate Kid.
There you go.
Hilary Swank.
Or Bruce Leroy.
He's got the glow.
Not when he catches the arrow, though. He catches bullets. That's true. When he's got the glow. There's a difference.
Yeah. Anyway. Not to be mixed up with Soul Glow.
Yeah. You
got that soul! Speaking of Coming to America...
Were we speaking of Coming to America?
A long time ago.
Earlier today, Justin was talking about it.
You can't see the seeds, can you? I like that movie.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
You know that's another movie you like? Revenge of the Jedi. Return of the Jedi.
Revenge of the Jedi. I like that one.
Return of the Jedi Special Edition. That's your favorite, right?
Ooh, I don't think so. I think Empire is my favorite.
More?
Are we talking specifically just special edition, like 97 version?
Either way, the correct answer is still Empire because
the
bonus scenes are all contribute to the movie. They make it better.
Yeah, you get the extra stuff with the Wampa, which was cool.
Yes.
My favorite edition is all the stuff on Cloud City where they kind of cut out sections of the wall so you see more of the exterior. Yeah. It kind of lightens it up a little bit. I really like that. Vader walking to his shuttle.
Yeah, that's my favorite, where he gets back on the shuttle to get back to his...
It's amazing. It's like 2 seconds, but I like how impactful it is. Like, it looks cool. It looks like it was shot that day. It looks like it's from 1980.
Well, the cool thing is they actually brought Dave Prowse in and put him in the suit. So they had the original actor and everything. So that was amazing. Oh, you know, the only thing that I think I don't like from the Empire Strikes Back Special Edition... And I could be wrong, this could be since then, but I think that was the first time that they made Luke scream when he falls down the, you know, after he gets his hand cut off and he jumps down off of the catwalk before he goes down into the little chutes to the outside where he ends up hanging on that weather vane
thing.
When
does he scream?
He's
like, ah, kind of like that Wile E. Coyote scream.
He always screams. It's a weird different scream in the special edition. I know what you're talking about, Andy.
Yeah, it's kind of like more, I hate to say it like this, but it's more of like a high-pitched, girly kind of scream. I don't mean girly in a bad way. I just mean it doesn't sound like
falsetto.
Mark Hamill, you know?
Like how I scream in a horror movie.
Yes.
Yeah, it sounds like how we scream in a horror movie, but not how Mark Hamill actually did it back in the day. I mean, they could have thrown a Wilhelm scream in there, and it would have sounded better.
They like the Wilhelm.
Anybody who doesn't know what a Wilhelm scream is, just Google it, and you'll realize that you've heard it in a million movies.
That's true. You even hear it in Star Wars video games.
Yeah.
Throwing that out there. I think the first time I heard it in a video game was in Shadow of the Empire.
Oh, what a good game.
That was a great game. So, yes, real quick. Let me just go over a few things that just kind of caught my attention. I've seen Empire Strikes Back 1,000 times. It is my favorite Star Wars movie. And
pretty good.
It's really good. Love it. Start to finish. It's basically two movies. You got Luke going one way, you got Han and Leia going another way, and then they meet back up full circle. But I love it. But when I'm watching the movie there, and you see R2 and 3PO just kind of having their little back and forth, and 3PO has just had it with R2, he just goes, "Oh, switch off." And I never heard him say that before. Seen the movie 1,000 times, and that's just, to me, was just him saying, "You know what? I'm tired of your shit. Go fuck off."
Go fuck yourself.
Exactly. And then, you know, Dave, you brought up an interesting point about when C-3PO sees that other protocol droid. And he's like, "Oh, nice to see a familiar face." And he's like, "Ichuta." He's like, "How rude." So, it's funny how even droids just fucking hate each other. I love it. Even they are petty.
Yeah, they're... Well, and I think when you look at it this way, they are like, they must be really looked down upon in the galaxy. Because, I mean, look at Star Wars. We don't serve their kind. You know, they're like the intergalactic minorities that nobody likes.
Yes, sir.
And that's just terrible.
Because there's no real minorities there, because it's just Lando.
Well, yeah, because they're all, they're all aliens and, you know, there's no real minorities at all. So I guess the droids are the minorities. But even so, treating them that way sucks. And they're essentially slaves. Droids are slaves. They have a restraining bolt on them, which is basically just like shackles, a leg chain, a ball and chain.
And then when they don't serve a purpose anymore, they just destroy them or sell them.
Mm-hmm.
Wipe their memories.
That's sad. Cook the books. And then another thing that caught my attention was when they're fighting the AT-ATs, and the snow speeders are just flying head on to these things that only have front cannons.
Yeah, yeah.
But it could just easily come at them from behind, just kind of flank them a bit.
Yeah, why don't you swing around outside of their range to the left or the right, and then just, you know, overshoot them a little bit, come back, and hit them from behind.
Yes.
That would have been brilliant. And, you know, I don't know if you guys ever played this. There was an Atari Empire Strikes Back video game, the old Atari 2600, and it was... like infuriatingly difficult, and I had the opportunity to play this game back at Star Wars Celebration Anaheim just a few months ago. They had it set up at this thing I was doing, and I hadn't played this game since I was a kid. I shit you not, since I was like 8 years old. And by the time I was done playing it for like 5 minutes, my thumbs hurt because I'm using one of those old Atari controllers. You use different fingers and different muscles than you would normally when you're playing any kind of modern game. It was a hell of a difference, and it was so goddamn hard. But the key was you came in, you hit it from behind, and that way you weren't as easily shot. They could still shoot behind them in the game, but still, it wasn't as difficult. I know I just kind of took us off on a tangent, but simple military tactics would be, if you're attacking a tank or something with a gun mounted in the front, you flank it from behind. End of story.
Always go at it from behind.
Maybe turn that giant ion cannon sideways and shoot a couple.
Yeah, right? It looks like you can level it down horizontal.
Oh, man. That's another thing, too. So then once the Millennium Falcon takes off and Luke sees it, you know, take off and take flight and go off out of orbit and everything, he meets up with that other crew that's packing up some shit, and they're still smiling and having a good time. They made me laugh. The whole base,
no hurry.
Run. Yeah, and not any rush whatsoever. They're like, "Hey, I'll see you at the rendezvous. Keep rocking and rolling, Luke. I like your style."
And Luke has no problem leaving the planet, but like Han has like 4 Star Destroyers.
He's like, Luke's ship is so small, he just squeaks out. Falcon's much bigger.
Falcon's dodging Star Destroyers.
Yeah, maybe the Falcon should have aimed the other way.
Oh, speaking of which, what is the name of the Super Star Destroyer that's flying up?
Executor.
The Executor?
executor, executor, however you want to pronounce it. Spelled the same way, executor sounds a lot more ominous, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. I like how they cast that shadow over the Star Destroyers.
Yeah. You're like, what's bigger than a Star Destroyer? Oh, that thing.
That's pretty big. And I like how Vader walks above everyone, like on that little catwalk on the bridge.
Yeah, they're all in their little cubbies.
Yeah,
they're all getting their little upskirt shots of Vader.
Mm-hmm. They're all, don't look at him, don't look at him.
That's some good shit. And then I guess my last question would have to be about the control panel on the carbon, on Han frozen in carbonite. Like, he goes into the thing, it freezes him, it comes out, and then all of a sudden there's a bunch of blinky buttons on it that monitor his vitals. At what point does the control panel get installed on his block of ice?
Here's the thing. I think that little control panel and really the entire kind of rectangle around the block of carbonite that he's frozen in, it's not carbonite itself. It is another metal, a hard metal. And it just kind of, as soon as he gets lowered into the pit, that thing just kind of like zzz, poof, like snaps up right behind him, like an assembly line kind of thing. It just gets pushed up behind him. Then he gets blasted with the carbonite and it freezes him into that little cavity inside of the box. So the control panel was already part of the box.
Wow.
Because you see when he gets unfrozen, only part of the carbonite itself unfreezes, and it doesn't affect any of that outer box. And this is speaking from a guy who has painstakingly built a life-size replica of it. That the box, the rectangle. Like,
Han, hold still.
Yeah, the rectangle around Han and carbonite. I mean, it is not, because the carbonite itself is kind of wavy. It looks like a lake that's frozen over. It's not like perfectly smooth. It's wavy. This is like a nice metal structure that somebody has built around it. It's not like a flowing organic structure.
Right.
So I
like when they melt it in Return of the Jedi and only like the Han Solo part melts, not the rest of it.
Yeah. She put it on the defrost setting for a couple minutes too short, yeah, you know, to defrost the entire thing. And where does it go? It just disappears. It doesn't like melt off into like a little pool of, it doesn't look like mercury or anything dripping off of him. It's just like,
maybe
it
that's
just
why
disappears.
That's why Jabba's so pissed. She made a mess on his floor.
Yeah. Or it just turns like into gas.
Yeah, it atomized it into the air. Mm-hmm. And now everybody has to breathe that shit. Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate it. It smells like Han.
Global warming. We're on Tatooine and you're fucking up our global warming situation here.
That's another thing.
Getting hotter.
He doesn't thaw out just cruising around in the desert.
I don't think it's a matter of cold. I think it's, maybe they have to introduce some sort of chemical to the equation to more dissolve it than thaw it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not up to snuff on my science.
Me either. Well, science fiction.
Oh, there you go. It's all fake. Star Wars
science.
Is fake.
Science faction?
Ooh. There you go.
Well, faction. When I think of factions, I think of Rebels,
teams.
Imperials, and then you get science. It's a science faction. Science.
I don't know. Jeez. I don't think that the Rebels deserve to win this one. I think they fucking suck.
Well, they're basically terrorists.
Yeah.
Well, are we talking episode 3 or are we talking original trilogy? Episode 7 or original trilogy?
That's just it. That's an interesting point because, original trilogy, I guess. But even in episode 2, when you have these separatists, you know, they're not buying into the bullshit, man. They just want to do their own thing.
Well, separatists, you can call them terrorists. You can call them revolutionaries.
They're rebels. They're rebels.
Well, yeah,
the rebels are terrorists.
Or they're revolutionaries, depending how you want to look at it.
History is written by the victors.
Same thing with the original trilogy.
You're beginning to sound like a separatist. Isn't that what he says to Padme?
Yes. So someone should make them act like, oh my god, there's so many terrible lines in the original trilogy.
Yes.
I mean, the
let's not revisit it. Just going to make all of us sad.
Anything, I mean, how can you really mess up on a casting choice twice? It's this rare in Hollywood. How can you
miss the same character?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. You, George Lucas, really messed that one up.
It's what he does. It's kind of his thing.
Yeah, it's kind of a ride.
So anyway, we're bringing this all up because we might get even more super mega special edition action on Blu-ray.
What? How can there be more special edition? There's no more Lucas around.
By making it back the way it was. Oh. The new special is the old way.
They should call it the unspecial edition.
So why don't you tell us, Dave, what Mr. Landis said?
Yeah, so John Landis was Universal Studios in Orlando because they have a American Werewolf in London maze, and they had a Q&A afterwards, and someone asked about making creatures in the Star Wars universe, and he politely said, oh, you know, George wouldn't let me, this is kind of George's thing, blah, blah, blah. Then he went on to talk about George messing up his films, but then at the very end he said, did you know Disney, by the way, is putting out the original Star Wars the way it was? So Disney, they're like money on the floor. I don't know what that last part means, but the first part means that he's got some inside info that the Disney's going to release the original trilogy unaltered. So, yeah, so now that I already own movies 1,000 times, I got to get 1,001 times.
So they find yet another way to trick us into buying it.
Damn you.
They'll make a Death Star edition where you got to... the movies are inside the Death Star, and it just keeps rolling off his shelf.
They'll recycle those Electro heads from The Amazing Spider-Man. Those
there you go. Yeah, there you go. Now we're talking. It'll just be like an emperor. That'd be kind of cool too. Like a ugly faced emperor that you got to stare at all the time.
I mean, do we? I guess there's two questions. Do we need to buy these? And should these have come on the original Blu-ray that came out a couple years ago?
Yes, they should have come out on the original Blu-ray.
That's I'll agree with that, but since I never bought the original Blu-ray,
I didn't either.
This might be the version I've been waiting for.
There you go. I have the tin. I have the tin where they did it on DVD.
I own every edition ever. I am the putz. I'm the reason they make all these editions.
Yeah. If you want to watch the theatrical versions, you can come to my house.
I still have like four versions on VHS, and I don't even own anything to play VHS on, but I still have them.
No. I didn't buy them on Blu-ray either, Randy, and I don't even really know why, because Amazon had them for like a super mega sale Christmas.
I came to this weird point in my life about 2 or 3 years ago where I stopped buying DVDs and Blu-rays.
You're not alone. Dave's in the same boat as you.
Yeah. I mean, I bought Star Wars, but I buy like 3 DVDs a year now.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'll rarely buy stuff, but it's usually from franchises that are beloved to me, and I have a big cabinet with nothing but DVDs and Blu-rays, and it is sorely in need of an update because it's like time stops around 2011 or 2012, something like that, in my movie collection. I just stopped caring.
Yeah, because I don't want to bend down and put shit in my DVD player anymore. It's not Netflix. I just need to watch it.
Exactly. I want to press a button and stream it. I want that shit like streamed into my brain. Yeah. God forbid I have to physically put a piece of media into an electronic device to make it happen. It's so weird.
Does that mean that you're buying stuff digitally on Amazon or iTunes or anything like that?
It's like if it doesn't stream on a service that I already have, I just will live without watching it unless it's something I really want to see. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's a movie that I own, like I watched all the original Jurassic Park movies before Jurassic World came out, and not all of those or even any of them, as far as I know, were streaming at the time on any of the services that I use. So I busted out my old DVDs.
They were playing like every 5 seconds on ABC. They might as well be fucking streaming.
Right. I know, but they had commercials, so it was too frustrating for me to try to watch it that way.
Oh, I know. I mean, last year I bought Guardians of the Galaxy, I bought, you know, Winter Soldier, I bought like the big ones that I knew that I probably would want to watch from time to time, or that I want to watch again when the sequels come out. But other than that, I mean, I used to buy DVDs like crazy. I have like 1,000 DVDs.
The last Marvel movie that I bought was Iron Man 2. I have Iron Man 1 and 2. That's it. That is it.
And you're like, Marvel peaked. I don't need to buy anything else.
Yeah, I'm done.
Honestly, I could just leave my Iron Man 1 in there on repeat, and I'd be happy.
That's a good one. I like that movie.
I love that movie.
I picked up Kingsman when that came out. I really enjoyed that movie. I actually bought Dread not so long ago. I got it for like $6 on Amazon, and that's just a movie that I want to show the whole world. I want everyone to know how awesome Dread is.
Yeah, it's a good one.
So that's why I picked it up.
Yeah. But on the Star Wars Blu-ray, I mean, when we talked about that, should it have been on there? It's really a disservice because it was sold as like the end-all be-all. Like the special features on it are amazing. They have pretty much every special feature that's ever been released from Star Wars ever. And it's got new special features. It's got new deleted scenes we've never seen before. And this really would have been the place to throw the original unedited versions on and been done with it. And it's just a shame that it didn't happen and that we have to buy this extra edition.
Yes.
Fuckers.
True. I concur.
True, true, true. You know what? Now that I think about it, Dave, I do have a couple of versions of Star Wars on DVD. Remember when they had that other one where there was like a Star Wars trilogy and it was like silver for mm-hmm. widescreen and gold for full screen, I think.
Yep.
Was that DVD or was that
they did a DVD and a VHS.
Shit, I think I have the VHS of that.
Yeah.
Well, the VHS ones are different, Randy. It's a very similar looking package, but the VHS is from a bygone era.
Oh, yeah. It was from a long time ago. It was like in when those special editions were re-released.
Yeah.
Like in 98 when they all kind of came out. It was like that summer of 98 when you were able to
summer
buy them.
Summer of 69.
But I remember we were working at Autoland when these DVDs came out.
Yeah.
Dave, I think you actually picked them up at Fry's.
Yeah, I have.
Left work and went and picked them up.
So I have the Blu-rays. I have those unedited, unaltered ones that are in the tin. I have the one you're talking about, Justin, that's the silver box set. They had another box set of the DVDs that I have with that different artwork. Then I have the prequel trilogy on DVD in a box set. Then I have all the prequel trilogy individually because they came as two-disc special editions. I have all of them individually. Then I own the Phantom Menace on VHS in both the regular and then they had a deluxe edition.
Right, where's a big box with a film cell and everything?
Uh-huh. I got that, and then I have the original trilogy on VHS 19 times in 6 different languages.
Wow.
What a nerd.
Yeah.
That is intense.
I have one version in PAL that I can't even play. Like, it won't play on my, like, I play with a VCR. Like, I'm like, they're not, like, region locked. It's for VHS. But something about, like, the spools or something.
Spools.
Amy brought it back for me from London when she went there when she was in high school.
It is a different frame rate, too. PAL is 25 frames per second, and it's like a square kind of.
It's not 4x3. It's like 4x4 probably. I knew it would play funky. I just was surprised that it wouldn't play at all.
Yeah, that's weird.
Star Wars. It's my fault.
You know what else is weird?
What?
The freaking ghost with the most.
Talking about Beetlejuice?
I am.
Beetlejuice?
Yes. Beetlejuice.
Just said 3 times.
Somebody had to say it.
What about him?
You gonna bring it up and just leave us hanging?
Jinx. I don't know. Randy's the one with the list.
You got it, Randy. Let's hear it.
Oh shit. We're doing that. We came to the list already? That's fantastic.
Yeah. Already.
Because already.
This is the longest show ever.
I don't think it's that long.
Oh, got it. We're at 72 hours.
Oh, that is pretty long. No wonder I'm wearing an astronaut diaper.
It's above average.
All right. Well, you know what? I have a fantastic list of 10 facts you didn't know about Beetlejuice.
Randy, I know everything about Beetlejuice.
Well, did you know, sir, that the original tone was originally going to be much, much darker than the one that we got?
What?
Now, there's some pretty disturbing mental images or images that we see in the movie there, and there's at least one F-bomb that we're fond of quoting in this movie. But originally the script was a hell of a lot darker. But they ended up wanting to make it a little bit more kid-friendly. Can you imagine that?
By darker, do you mean when they wanted Sammy Davis Jr. to play Beetlejuice?
No, that's actually the next one on my list. Can you believe that he was originally going to be played by Sammy Davis Jr.? In fact, the weird thing about the casting of Beetlejuice is most of the actors that ultimately ended up being in this classic movie turned down the role initially, including Michael Keaton. A lot of these people were like, no, not for me. And it wasn't until they came back again later on that they ended up putting together the cast that they have now. But Sammy Davis Jr., I don't know. I think originally the character was going to be a lot more laid back and kind of like a lounge singer type. So it makes sense. And I mean, honestly, he wouldn't have looked all that much different because there's just a lot of face makeup.
Face makeup.
No, I mean, like white makeup and stuff. It just, I mean, he kind of looks like a clown. So whether you have Sammy Davis Jr. or Michael Keaton, he's just going to be in white face no matter who it is. Does that sound bad? Does that sound terrible?
Okay.
But, I mean, funny.
It's just like clown makeup.
I like it.
I mean, the gist would be the same. Anyway, moving on. Do you know who was originally going to play the role of Winona Ryder's character? Juliette Lewis.
I could see that.
Lewis. Can you see that?
Yeah.
I suppose I can imagine that for back in that time. But still, I think in going with the whole Tim Burton emo goth girl kind of thing, Winona Ryder was a perfect choice.
Yeah. Well, you got to think this, you know, Christmas Vacation Juliette Lewis, like real young.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
You thinking what I'm thinking?
I'm thinking what you're thinking. All the time.
Hmm.
And this is kind of interesting, too. So Catherine O'Hara's character was almost played by Angelica Houston.
Oh, I could see that, too.
I could totally see that. I mean, that just has a very Tim Burton vibe to it.
I think that Catherine O'Hara is so goddamn funny. And I dare say underrated. I think that the world has forgotten about her, and that's a shame.
No, I totally agree. She was in a lot of...
Speaking of Angelica Houston, have you guys seen the Christina Ricci as Morticia picture?
Yeah, that's horribly photoshopped. They took an image of Angelica Houston, they flipped it horizontally, put Christina Ricci's head on it, and gave it a plunging neckline. It's total Photoshop.
I don't care. It looks nice.
It does look nice. I agree. I would... You guys seen Black Snake Moon?
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good movie, Randy.
All right, moving right along. Number four. So, the movie's called Beetlejuice, right? Beetlejuice is a character in the movie. Guess how much screen time Michael Keaton's Beetlejuice character actually has in his Beetlejuice movie?
6 minutes.
17 minutes.
David is looking at it. David has his Google machine working just fine. It is 17 minutes.
I was playing a game. I may have come across a list similar to this.
Oh, see? Sorry, I just ruined the answer to one of the questions.
It's not a game. Don't worry. You're good.
So, do you guys know where the name Beetlejuice came from?
Don't.
It is based on a star, which is housed in the Orion constellation, also called Beetlejuice, but spelled completely differently. So somebody heard that, thought it had a nice ring to it, and decided to create a character based on it. Now here's another interesting thing. There are some deleted scenes that exist that show the kind of limbo in between basically death and the afterlife, and it shows it as being like inside of a giant clock with all these spinning gears and clock hands and stuff. Never made it into the movie, and I don't know if it ever made it into like a Blu-ray or DVD kind of deleted scenes thing, but kind of interesting nonetheless. Now, the next one, the number three. Basically, the number three comes up in the movie a few times. Of course, you know you have to say Beetlejuice's name three times to get him to appear.
You have to knock three times.
Knock three times, that's another one.
I don't know the other
one. Do you know the... Okay. So the other one is you have to say the word home three times escape Beetlejuice.
Home, home, home. That's right.
Yeah.
She just guesses.
How to do that.
She just guesses on that one, yeah. Interesting.
Lucky guess, Davis.
I'm sure you guys all remember the dinner party scene with the big musical Deo number. That is considered to be the most popular and iconic scene of the entire movie. And if you listen carefully during the opening, like the opening of the movie where the Geffen logo appears, you actually hear Danny Elfman singing Deo distantly in the background. So that is not the Harry Belafonte version. That is Mr. Danny Elfman singing it, who is the composer for the movie and also the frontman of the defunct Oingo Boingo band.
Oh.
That we all knew and loved. So Beetlejuice became so popular that it actually spawned an animated series, which I knew about, and it spawned a whole line of action figures, which I also knew about. But what I didn't realize is how long this animated series lasted. It was on for two full seasons, which back in those days amounted to over 100 episodes.
What?
So there are over 100 half-hour episodes of the animated Beetlejuice TV show, which basically followed the shenanigans of Beetlejuice and Lydia, which I believe is Winona Ryder's character.
Yeah.
So I had no idea there were that many episodes. That's crazy. I remember seeing it as a kid, but I never, like, sat down to watch it because, to be honest, I wasn't that big a fan of the movie. My one and only times trying to see it theatrically was at a freaking drive-in, and I was so uninterested with the pace of the movie and what was going on, I found it more interesting to go play over at the swing set and slides and stuff. So I really do not remember much of my first Beetlejuice experience.
Amazon has the complete series for $53.90.
Hey, that's not too bad.
12 discs.
I would have never guessed there were 100 episodes.
Yeah, honestly. Okay, did you guys know that there was going to be a sequel, like, shortly after the original? Of course, they've been talking lately about trying to get a sequel off the ground, too, and it looks like it might actually happen. But did you know that there was going to be a sequel called Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian? The tagline on this is amazing. This summer, he's putting the owl in luau. And it's got, like, an animated poster, like a, not animated, but kind of like a cartoony-looking poster. And he's riding a surfboard wearing, like, Bermuda shorts and a Hawaiian shirt with a big old lei around his neck. He's got Lydia over his shoulder while he's riding a surfboard on this big wave. And a couple people chasing him on a Sea-Doo-looking thing. And then a couple people in the foreground sipping drinks, umbrella drinks, just watching him. It looks like it would have been an animated movie more so than a live action one, just from this artwork. But it's probably a good thing that that didn't happen back in the day.
So I'm going to go ahead and our game now has 9 questions instead of 10 questions.
Oh, was that one of the answers?
Yeah, that's all right. Did you know that when they wanted Kevin Smith to direct it?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, they were going to do it. They wanted to do it right afterwards, and Tim Burton said, "No, I want to go to this Batman thing." And then when after Kevin Smith made Chasing Amy and everyone wanted him to make their movies, he went to Warner Brothers and said, "Hey, what do you got?" And they wanted him to make Beetlejuice Goes to Hawaii.
I like it when Adam or Alec Baldwin picks up the book and he says, "Handbook for the Recently Diseased." He doesn't know how to read. He's like illiterate in that movie. I don't understand why.
He looks like a hardware store. He doesn't need to read.
Isn't that kind of a weird quirk for his character to have, to just not be able to read well?
I guess he just wasn't paying attention.
He calls it Beetlegeuse. Although I think it's spelled with a G.
Yeah, in the movie it's G-U-E-S-E.
Yeah, which is how the star is spelled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. I think they realized that people would not be able to pronounce that, so they should probably spell it like it sounds.
Here's another fun point of interest, and I'm sorry if this ruins another question in your game, David. But there is actually a Beetlejuice stage show at Universal Studios Orlando that has been running since 1992. It's called the Rock and Roll Graveyard Review. And as of the time that this article was written, around Halloween of 2013, so about 2 years old, it was still running there for over 20 years. Now, we had one here, Universal Studios Hollywood, but it was replaced in 2002 by Spider-Man Rocks, which I actually saw with you 1 year, David. I remember.
That's right.
The last time I was actually at Universal Studios.
It's sadly not there anymore.
I can imagine. But yeah, that replaced the Rock and Roll Graveyard Review. So, I mean, hey, Florida is either onto something by keeping it around until it's popular again, or they're just really pandering to that retired crowd that everybody says moves down to Florida. So, got the old folks.
Well, I've seen both shows, and I can tell you that either one is good.
I don't think I ever saw the Beetlejuice show. Again, I was never really into Beetlejuice, though. All right, so that's our list this week. All sorts of fun stuff. And again, I apologize if I torpedoed your game. But
there's really only just one question, which is fine.
All right, cool.
It's good because my question... I was talking about the sequel. It was kind of hard, so I'd put the tagline in the question to try to motivate people. My question was like, what's name the tropical location the Beetlejuice sequel was going to be set? He puts the owl in luau.
So. Yeah.
But that's totally fine. That's a good list, and I urge you, Randy, to go and watch Beetlejuice. It's it holds up well, and it's so fun. Michael Keaton is amazing. Even though he's only in for 17 minutes, you think he's on there the entire time.
Yeah, and I have seen it over the years. I've seen bits and pieces of it several times. I just haven't sat down and watched it beginning to end. And, I mean, I might take some heat for this, but I actually like Tim Burton, and we all know that I really like Danny Elfman. So, and I have the soundtrack. It's just, it's just for some reason I just haven't been able to bring myself to sit and watch the whole thing. Maybe it's because I'm lazy and it's not on Netflix, and I haven't been able to just click and watch it, you know?
It's on Netflix, isn't it?
Is it?
I think it is. I just watched it the other day. I literally just watched it last week. It might have been on Prime, though. I'll check.
Okay. I was going to say, if it is, then I have no excuses, so I'll have to look into that.
I literally just watched it. It must be on Prime.
So if you literally just watched it, you're poised to do pretty well in this game.
Yeah. It's okay. I made the questions pretty simple. To be a fun, lighthearted, quick game. So
cool.
So yeah, so the game also surrounds Beetlejuice because, like we said earlier, I hadn't watched it in forever. I watched it. I'm like, this movie is great. I remembered how great it was. Michael Keaton's amazing in it. So I thought, hey, let's have a fun little game. We all love Beetlejuice. I didn't know that Randy didn't love Beetlejuice, that he just kind of likes Beetlejuice. Like, but they're seeing other people.
Yeah.
But they're pretty easy questions. Like, and so how about I'll give the question. As soon as you know the answer, just yell it out. There's 9 questions, unfortunately. So,
9 times.
9 That's okay. times.
That way, if we're tying it up, you know, 4-4, we have a tiebreaker.
That's
without resorting to a golden snitch.
I like the optimism here, Andy. I like the optimism. All right, so let's get started. You guys ready? Fingers ready. On the buzzer. All right. Who directed Beetlejuice?
Tim Burton.
Tim Burton.
Ah, I heard Justin first. It's an easy one. Nice. All right. Name the song the Dietzes are forced to perform during their dinner party. Deo, Randy, good job. On the board. All right. What film has Beetlejuice seen 160?
Nexus.
Exorcist is right.
It keeps getting funnier every time I see it.
All right. The handbook for the recently deceased reads like what?
Stereo instructions.
There you go. Justin's on his game. 3-1. All right. How do you summon Beetlejuice?
Say his name.
Say his name 3 times.
Yeah. Justin's just too fast today. All right. When Barbara and Adam try to scare the Dietzes, what do they wear?
Their wedding outfits.
No.
Oh, no.
Is it like some sort of mask?
No,
sheets.
They were the bed sheets.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Beetlejuice. When they get brought back to life, they're in their wedding suits.
Yeah. I was thinking when they're in the closet and the wedding outfits are in the way, or the dress.
Oh, yeah, and he's like hanging himself. Aside.
Yeah.
Good guess. Good guess. All right. In the Beetlejuice world, what happens to those who commit suicide in real life? In the
outside, they get in limbo.
No, they get a certain job.
Oh, don't they got a? They work at the front desk. They work at the center for helping all the dead folk.
I am going to count that. They become civil servants.
Yes.
All right.
Civil servants can't go on strike.
That's right. All right. Beetlejuice lures a fly into a trap using what candy bar?
Is it Mr. Goodbar?
No. Oh. It's a candy bar I've never had, and I don't even know if it exists anymore.
Yeah, I don't know if it exists or maybe they made it up for the movie. I don't know. I saw it when I was doing my list research, but I couldn't tell you what it is off the top of my head.
Ah, it's a Zagnut.
Oh,
Zagnut, yeah.
It is a real candy bar. I've just never had it. I don't know what it's made of. It's probably gross. All right, final question. What type of creatures inhabit the other dimension? This ain't Dune, son.
Oh, the war sandworms.
Sandworms it is. All right, Justin, this was your game.
I hate them myself.
Sandworms. Hate them, right? So, yeah, good job, Justin. Justin 6, Randy 1. It was kind of a like pistol whipping a ball.
Sorry, I just watched it. I feel bad.
That's all right.
I mean, I'd seen it 10,000. I actually saw it in the theater, believe it or not, with my family. We all went. It was a school night, too. Those are always fun. Go on a school night to the motion picture show.
Yeah, I remember because my parents were big on seeing movies on like opening night, and I remember seeing this at the Cinedome opening night, and there's like a line. I remember having to get there like a half hour early to wait in line to see it.
I remember being kind of sad that they died in the first like 4 minutes of the movie. I'm like, what the hell am I watching?
It's like they did.
And I didn't understand Alec Baldwin's taste in music. You know how he's listening
right
to the not quite Rastafari music, but it just seemed out of place. I don't know.
He's a fan of the Calypsos.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah, so
just struck me as odd. It seemed out of place. I guess everything's out of place in a Tim Burton movie, though.
Yeah, I would agree. But yeah, you should definitely watch it, Randy. Any time that Michael Keaton is on screen as Beetlejuice is pure magic. Like when he's talking about like, what was it? Shit. That doesn't matter. I'll think of it. Like, it was getting married. He's like, oh, should I do it? And I said, if I do it, I want to do it once. And, all right, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Or then he won't tell Winona Ryder. He won't tell her his name. Yeah. And he's like, you know, if I tell you, you'll tell two friends. I'll tell two friends. And I get called to go open like shopping malls. And I can't go places. And that's just not getting good.
And then when it's just like screaming bloody murder, like she's so close, and he's like, come on! He's like screaming. He's like, I better talk to Barbara. He's like, no, you don't need to talk to Barbara. It's so funny. And when he's like all getting excited when he sees the strip club, and he's like, yeah, he starts combing his hair and thrusting towards it.
He's got he's still got the spikes on him from when the barber says, like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's edgy. He is a dirty, dirty man.
Oh.
Good stuff.
Yeah. That's all I got.
That's all I got. I think. Is that it? Any crazy plugs for you crazy bastards?
Well, we are theoretically playing the SummerSlam Film Festival this coming weekend in Freeport, Texas, but I could not tell you the day or the time because it has not been revealed yet, so I can't effectively plug it, but if you have the opportunity, check them out online. Just Google SummerSlam Film Festival, or of course, if you're already following us, as you should be, on Facebook and Twitter, at NS2CC. We'll be posting all that information as soon as it is available. We have a bunch more festivals that are jumping on the bandwagon. We have 9 screenings over the next 2 months. So I'm only going to feed you guys a little bit at a time so you don't get overwhelmed. But we have a lot going on. So visit our Facebook page or our website, nonstoptocomiccon.com or ns2cc.com. Check it out. And all of our schedule for the foreseeable future is up there. You can plan out your movie watching experience.
Shit. It's like Disneyland where you get that map.
I know.
Where to go.
It's kind of like a treasure hunt.
It's kind of a ride.
Huh. Kind of a ride, yeah.
There you go. Cool, man. Go ahead. What else you got?
I was going to say, any of our friends in the Nevada area, check out the Laughlin International Film Festival the weekend of October 15th to 18th. We're going to be playing out there in a real live movie theater. And it's going to look pretty amazing. So I'm super stoked about that.
Oh, my God. I haven't been to Laughlin in, 30 years.
Dude, I've never been. And I'm actually going to go out for this one. So I'm hoping it's cool.
It's interesting. Oh, it's not that good.
I remember, because we used to go to Vegas, 10 times a year. And, we're like, hey, let's go to Laughlin because it's, 5 cents to go there. And we thought, it'd be, the same. And we're like, oh, no, this isn't this. And I remember, we stayed there, and it was, $8 one night, and the other night was free.
Oh, wow.
How does that work?
I don't know.
They just needed butts in seats.
I remember we went there, and I had this green army man that I gave Amy that she, put on her dashboard, and she, affixed it with some kind of, adhesive or whatever. And we got back, and it had melted. It was just this flat green disc on her dashboard.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's not going to be too hot. But the cool thing is we get already it's kind of cheap to stay out there, but we're getting discounted rates through the film festival to stay out there. So it's going to be a relatively inexpensive jaunt. So
yeah,
should be a good time.
Laughlin's fun because when you go there, they have the bumpy road. It's hilly.
Bumpy, not very well paved. Yeah, bring a spare set of tires.
This one stretch where obviously the person making the road had fun to where it's just it's not jarring or anything, but it's just you go up a hill and you go down, you're up and down. They're only 10 feet high, but it's just kind of funny.
Yeah.
They did just level it.
And it's on the river. See? So it's kind of. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's right on the Arizona border, Arizona Nevada border.
Should you bring your papers? They might not let you come back.
Yeah.
They got that
all your papers.
Yeah, that one little toll bar thing that comes down. It's awesome.
Arizona, man. They don't risk it.
They don't like Mexicans there.
No.
Anyway. We do like Mexicans.
Love them, I dare say.
We certainly do.
Because they're frequently uncircumcised.
Is that true?
I don't know.
And is that the reason you love them?
That's why I love them. I don't know if that's true. All the ones that I've closely inspected are uncircumcised.
Interesting.
And he has inspected several.
Yes.
Like hundreds.
Every day at the gym.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them are wild accusations because I mainly just see like a tiny outline through the hole and then just a penis. So sometimes I just assume.
Can't assume.
Mexican. I know. It's hard.
It's just wrong.
So you want to know what else is wrong?
This podcast.
It is. But one funny thing that happened out of South Park was someone made a rape. Someone talked about rape, and then someone said, "Like, you talking about a hot Cosby?" So I'm hoping the term "hot Cosby" becomes a thing.
Man, I haven't watched it yet. I'm
behind. It was amusing.
It was like a total throwaway line. Like it happens like in the first 2 minutes, but it just when he said "hot Cosby," I just lost my shit. I'm like, and it's like no forbearing on the rest of the episode.
I feel kind of crazy about this whole Cosby thing, only in that we have been calling that guy a molester for years.
Jokingly.
Jokingly.
It is true.
And that's just nuts.
If you listen to our Nerd Off, where I take the part of, I take Bill Cosby and the sweater off, like we straight call him like a child, like a molester of kids and or of women and stuff like that. So
yeah, not kids.
Running a gynecological office out of his basement. We knew back then, but doesn't that just kind of make you wonder, like, what else were we right about? What
everything.
Else did we call?
Yeah. Everything.
I don't think we've ever been wrong.
You've heard it first.
Oh, I think there might be some people out there in the Twitterverse that would disagree with that statement, Mr. Edmondson.
Probably.
Which part? Zack Snyder sucks. That's true.
we may occasionally not always be correct, but hopefully we usually err on the side of
we're always correct from a certain of being point right. of view.
Certain point of view.
We're playing the Obi-Wan rules.
Yeah. That's right. So what I told you was the truth from a certain point of view. I don't see any point of view that was true, sir.
Is there any evidence that R2-D2 remembers Yoda in what you see in Empire Strikes Back?
No.
Shouldn't he?
Yeah.
His mind was never wiped. His memories were never erased like 3PO's were.
There's
How come R2 doesn't say, "You son of a bitch, Luke Skywalker, I knew your father, and I used to ride around and save his ass, and it was really cool."
The expanded universe touches on it like briefly, you know, even though it doesn't count anymore. But the whole point with R2 is that he develops these picadillos because he hasn't had his memory erased. And also, it's hinted at that Anakin like futzes with R2 at a certain point. Because R2 is basically there during Anakin's like worst times, and that at some point Anakin sets up some kind of like subroutine in R2 to where he archives certain memories, and so that's why Luke stumbles upon a couple of them at one point where he actually like sees his mother and stuff like that. That's why the second that R2 sees Luke, he's like, "Hey, dude, I know your dad," or he doesn't call bullshit on Obi-Wan because he's in the same room. He should be like. It'd be interesting to watch to see if R2 makes any noise when Obi-Wan's talking about Anakin to see like if that's like droid for like, "You full of shit." Mm. He's like, "You don't believe this old man. He's going to take you into an alley and just fucking bend you over and show you the 50 states."
Yeah, because Luke never let R2 out of his sight for the most part.
Mm-mm. I don't seem to remember ever owning a droid.
Yeah.
Bullshit. He's had several droids and he had some hands-on activity with R2.
And he may have killed your dad.
Liar.
Yeah, he's
played. There's the special edition I want.
Yeah.
Like, while Obi-Wan's talking to Luke, he's just like flashing these like holograms in the background of like Obi-Wan just like murdering his dad.
Yeah, I just want to hear like the or see the English subtitles pop up. Like R2 all of a sudden chirps more throughout the movie, and he's just trying to say, no, that's not what happened. And just like all this stuff popping up in English at the bottom to translate the beeps.
Right. It's like Stewie going, "Mom. Mom,
yeah,
mommy.
Exactly, that's exactly.
And he finally whistles for like 3PO to back him up, and 3PO's like, "I don't know what you're talking about." It's like, oh yeah, they wiped your mind because you talk too much.
I do like how 3PO says thank the Maker.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, once you know the Maker is Darth Vader.
It's interesting.
He's a highly religious man. That's why he's a deity to the
Ewoks. That's another thing. So Han says, "Then I'll see you in hell." In Empire Strikes Back, there's really no other mention of heaven or hell in the Star Wars universe, at least in the cinematic universe. I don't know about expanded, but that's interesting that he would say something like that, that hell exists, acknowledging that perhaps hell does in fact exist in this universe.
Yeah, it's a total throwaway line, but yeah, I always thought that felt kind of weird. Like, anytime in the Star Wars universe, if they ever referred to anybody as a human, or if they bring any kind of religious constructs that we as humans have come up with, I think they don't necessarily belong in the Star Wars universe. And I can't remember if they say human anywhere else other than the original live-action Jabba sequence from A New Hope, where at the end, Han says, you're a wonderful human being.
Yeah. Which is awkward. Speaking of Empire Strikes Back dialogue, the dialogue, anytime 3PO and Han converse, especially in Hoth, it's just magical.
Yeah.
Or like 3PO's all like, might I inquire as to what's going on? You might.
He's like, impossible, man. Yeah, it's pretty funny. 3PO just like gives up. He's like, man, fuck this guy.
Yeah. Poor 3PO.
The other bit of dialogue that always kind of bothered me, and this is from the prequel trilogy, was in Revenge of the Sith when Palpatine calls Yoda my little green friend. For some reason, I hate that because it makes me think of Kermit the Frog or something.
Oh, really?
Just calling him green because you don't really hear colors really described very often in Star Wars universe. My little green friend. It just sounds so like outside of the Star Wars universe. It's like yes, it's condescending and it's meant to be, but I don't know. It just doesn't sound Star Wars-y to me.
I don't like it when Palpatine's like having like a laugh fit and like freaking out and been in the Senate.
Throwing the like, Senate at Yoda. Yeah.
Like, just freaking out. Like,
he's so he threw the Senate at him. The whole Senate. No joke.
And then it cuts to Yoda, like, crawling towards the camera. Like, he's like a puppy or
and
something.
He looks like a wet dog. He just looks like all defeated because he's out of his robe and he's like all scrawny and just sweaty and he's a mess.
Yeah, it's a little.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I do love it when he's cutting off heads and when he throws his lightsaber into the stormtrooper and then jumps on his chest and pulls it out.
Yeah.
There's another guy. That was pretty fun. Sweet.
Yeah, that
was magic. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some great moments in episode 3, but there are some equally just cringeworthy moments.
Those usually correspond with Hayden Christensen opening his mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's too bad.
I'm so in love with you.
What?
They're talking and like she's like taking out. I can't even.
He's something like, "You're so beautiful. It's only because I'm so in love with you."
Oh man.
The dialogue for all of their romance is wrong.
Get down on your knees and tell me you love me.
Exactly.
Like in Home Alone 2, we love you. Oh shit.
Even the most of our dialogue is awful. From my point of view, the Jedi are evil. Well, then you are lost. Don't do it, Anakin. I have the high ground.
Oh, yeah. He should just force pull his ass into the lava.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as he jumps up in the air, just, like, stop him, and then just fucking slam dunk his ass into the lava.
I hate you.
Yeah, or force push lava into his face.
Yeah, see, I was thinking that. Just like, why not just grab some, like, force grab some lava and throw it around? You can't deflect that with the lightsaber.
That was one of the really good things about that Star Wars musical that we were competing against last week, was there's a scene where Obi-Wan and Vader are fighting in the Death Star, and as they're all close up with their lightsabers that are locked, Obi-Wan starts playing with the buttons on Darth Vader's chest. And like, Darth Vader keeps slapping, like, don't!
Yeah, they should totally just turn off his respirator.
Yeah.
Or force fog up his eye sockets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get why him breathing doesn't fog up his lenses, too. I think that would be funny if he just kept wiping his lenses.
They're like little windshield wipers inside.
Dude, time out. Seriously, well,
that,
time out,
that,
man.
That sound isn't it really him breathing. It's the sound of the freaking windshield wipers inside of his head. Defogging his lenses.
Now we're talking. Do it.
Poor, poor Darth Vader.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
I sure hope he comes back in episode 7.
He's a traitor and a liar.
No, the rebels are the traitors.
That too.
They're bad. They're
he's talking about having his own empire as soon as he takes on the mantle of Darth Vader.
Yeah.
He's always up to no
good. I will bring peace and stability to my empire.
Your that, empire?
That was the best take, George? Really? How many times did you do that?
Once.
Yeah. One and done.
There's a lot of that.
That's what they started calling Hayden Christensen on set.
Yeah.
There's old one and done Hayden.
Yeah, they're like, oh, it's not going to get better.
He was in Jumper, you know.
He was. He's better in Jumper. He wasn't
yeah, he's actually pretty good. Did you guys see that Nick Cage movie that he's in? It's like set in some sort of medieval time and yeah, there's a lot of swordplay in it.
Did you see it?
No.
I didn't see it, but I want
it's
to.
It's pretty crazy. He's still as terrible an actor, but it's crazy to see like Nicolas Cage and like as like a warrior in the medieval times.
Did you ever see Takers?
Takers?
Yeah.
Doesn't sound familiar.
Or Losers?
No, it's like it's like Chris Brown and Matt Dillon.
Yes.
And
where they're
Idris
like
Elba and they like rob things. They rob.
Yes.
I don't even know what they're doing. They might be bank robbers. I don't remember. But he wears a hat.
I think
Walker might be in it too.
Paul Walker is in it.
That's pretty good. You should check it out. That's all I got.
Yeah, they're bank robbers.
I remember being pleasantly surprised when it was all said and done.
There was some of Paul Walker's in the other day. I'm like, holy shit, Paul Walker's in this movie.
Was it the one in the sea?
The like, what?
It's like in the ocean?
No. What ocean? Into the blue?
You Chinese or you Japanese?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Into the Blue, that's it.
Jessica Alba.
Did you see that movie?
I did, because Jessica Alba was in it, and that was like the height of Jessica Alba. That was just post Sin City.
I like it when she's dancing in the Sin City.
Yes.
I could watch
this movie is also good, because she's in a bikini the entire time.
Oh. Well, because she's at the water.
That, I'm not complaining.
Anywho, I think that's it. Are we done? We're done.
That's it. Done.
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Home, home, home.
I was just going to say, done, done, done. That's funny. Yeah, that's it. Episode 160 lasted 160 minutes.
Sounds about right.
Do you know Paul Walker was an episode of Who's the Boss?
I did not know that.
An episode of Charles in Charge.
I could believe it. He's dating somebody. A girl?
Oh, I'm sure he was the boyfriend in both.
Yeah. Finding Man. I like Who's the Boss. I liked how the grandma was always wanting to. She was like a Blanche of sorts.
Yeah, Mona.
Yeah, Mona. That's it. So what was his name? Tony Flippicelli or Tony? Oh God, what was his last name in that show?
Vizzelli or something. Let's see here.
Lipicelli. Lipicelli.
Something horrifically racist. Maselli. Maselli. With an M.
There you go.
I remember she was Angela Bauer. He was Tony Maselli.
Yeah.
Mona. Mona won a bona. Mm-hmm. Too much?
I don't think so. Never too much. This is 2015.
No such thing.
Yeah. Anywho. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. Dave, Randy, thank you for joining me as always. Two fun and festive individuals. Couldn't do it without you.
We try.
We were supposed to have Amanda, but then she went on a camping trip. Then we were supposed to have Jess, and she fell asleep because she's in Ohio. That's a problem.
The entire state is the problem.
Yeah. No Jess, no Amanda. Just a bunch of dudes. All with their penises out. And remember to visit GeekLegacy.com for all your geek news and reviews. Whilst you're there, check out the other podcasts we have on the Geek Legacy Network. Of course, there is the Comic Corner podcast, hosted by Jeff and Tyler, where they review comics currently in the pull list. And then you have the Pixelated podcast with the lovely Stephen K. Janes, where he's always talking about the video games. And remember to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, at Geek Legacy, at Pixelated Pod, and at The Common Core. Thank you so much. Have a lovely week. And we will see you next time.
Later!